Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Security Repo Podcast. I'm really excited to have a special guest on the show today. Dwayne and I, as you probably know, both work for GitGuardian. And today we have our co-founder and CEO on the show with us, Mr. Eric Foyer. So, Eric, welcome to the show. It's so good to finally have you on board and to have you here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Like, really happy to be here, and let's have a great discussion.
Thanks very much for being a guest on our show. We're really always happy to have a founder of any technology here, especially one where we're very much heavily involved and invested in. But we do love origin stories, and GitGuardian. Probably most of our viewers and listeners have heard of GitGuardian. But they might not know, where did GitGuardian come from? Like, this idea of let's go looking for secrets in GitHub. Like, what was the idea behind that? Like, what were you working on where you came across this notion?
Yeah, it's a funny story because it started as a side project. So I'm an engineer, and especially a machine engineer by background. So I've done my studies in France, which is pretty famous for AI, I would say, AI studies and AI schools now. And I worked as a data scientist in the Silicon Valley for 1 year in San Francisco. And you realized, I think, two important stuff. So I had both the experience of a developer and a machine learning engineer, so I could do both. And I saw sometimes data scientists struggling with, you know, Git and understanding the basic concept of Git, and even, you know, basic security, and so a lot of hard-coded AWS secrets in Jupyter Notebook and stuff like that. So I thought there's definitely a problem here. And at the same time, after I came back from the US and I started the first company doing, consulting, basically we were implementing machine learning algorithms for companies. And on a side project, I wanted to just say, okay, I've seen this issue of, you know, secrets in code, and I knew it could lead to huge leaks and big danger for companies. And, you know, as an engineer, you're always looking for, and especially machine learning engineer, you're always looking for good data to train your algorithm and to backtest them. And I was like, oh, there is GitHub. It's actually like 60 million repos, billion and 10 of billions of lines of code. And it's a huge data set that could use to say, okay, I can train my detection algorithm, secret detection algorithm. And it's how it started, trying to, you know, use a public available code to train a secret detection engine. And the second stuff I wanted is, you know, help developers write secure code. So it's really the combination of both. I use all the public data available and crawl GitHub in real time. And each time the algorithm was finding a secret, we were shooting an email alert to the developers saying, oh, be careful, you just left the secrets here. And trying to educate them about not hard coding secrets in code, but using the correct way. Teaching them to use the correct way to use secrets, meaning like using environment variable, secrets manager. At the time in 2017 was the early day, not the early days of old, but, you know, the early days of secrets manager in general. And after, I think the everything went pretty fast because, yeah, the demand was here. People loved the product, and we first built the product for developers, was free for developers, and after it grew to a company, a business selling to enterprise everywhere in the world. So especially we started to sell to the US from France, but now we have customers like all around the world, Japan, Australia, Europe, US. So yeah, it's the story of an engineer style project that becomes a company. So it's pretty cool.
I love the story. And actually, I was preparing for this talk, and I wanted to wear the oldest piece of GitGuardian memorabilia I had. So I found the shirt that I got, which has the old logo on it, that I got when I started. And I will admit, I think I've put on a bit of weight since I joined GitGuardian because it's quite tight. But going back, and I remember, you know, the first interviews that I had at GitGuardian, and you know, you were really having to, you know, explain the problem a lot back then. And now I think it's more well defined. Now I think people understand it. You know, perhaps and probably thanks to lots of breaches that come out. But why back when in 2017, back when this whole show kind of began, you know, why were people not aware of this as a problem as they are today? What caused that?
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. So when we started in 2017 with my co-founder Jeremy, at the time that I will say that, as you said, the market was not mature. The secret detection category didn't really exist. And there were like a few open source tools. So there was the first version of Trafalog, and there was AWS Git Secret. So basically a pre-commit. So you don't, when you try to commit some code and there is an AWS key, it will, you know, say stop. You just committed an AWS key. You are not allowed to do that. That was actually coded by AWS, the team at AWS themselves, because I think they had like, they were like pissed off and about people being, you know, abused, that, you know, having the AWS secrets abused. And back in the days, I will say at the time when you leaked an AWS secret on GitHub, so in 2017, 2018, directly, usually people were leaking AWS root keys, so hackers would just were taking just the control of all your infrastructure. They were launching like 20 EC2s instance per region and mining Bitcoin with it. So there was a big time of using AWS key to mine Bitcoin. So AWS said we need to stop this, and they developed that, but actually was not enough. And on the other side, I said small open source project, but really I will say on the offensive side. So besides AWS trying to be on the, you know, defensive position, actually there was nobody, like, you know, Trafalog was designed for, you know, bug bounty hunters trying to find secrets, and from with the secrets, you know, use them to do lateral movement in organization and get other reward, but nobody really thought about building, I will say, a product to defend, actually. So really taking the blue team when you think about cyber in general. And yeah, that's definitely the position we took, which is always a hardest position in cyber. And I think people also thought it was sometimes, you know, easy problem to fix. And, you know, when I started, a lot of people said, oh, but, you know, senior developers, they don't leak secrets, it's only junior developers, and, you know, just a false truth like that. But when you look at the data, actually, it's not correct. Like the reality is, for me, it's when you have a secret hard coded, it's usually a mistake. It's like, you know, doing like, you can think about us as a little bit of spell checker. When you do a mistake, it's just human error at the end of the day. It's and you need a tool that helps you to write more secure code. And yeah, definitely not having secrets is code is for us and for me was one of the most simple but also one of the most critical vulnerability, and that's has always been in the, I would say, the art of, you know, GitGuardian philosophy is really focused on the high impactful problems. And secrets was definitely, at the time and still today, I will say, a problem that was not tackled. Like, you had small solution, but nobody tried to take a holistic approach. And that's where we went, trying to focus on the most critical stuff, focusing first on secrets leaked on public repos, and after going, which is for me one of the most critical vulnerabilities when you think about code security. And after we went, customer said, oh, that's great what you do in public repos, you know, you should like start doing it in our internal repos. And that's really how the story began, from public to internal and now code security.
So I want to steer it back toward the public side of it, at least for the next piece of the conversation. So I talk to people all over the world all the time. I go to a lot of conferences and on behalf of GitGuardian, and if there's one thing that we're known for above all else is the report we put out every year. In fact, this past weekend, I was noticed on Twitter or X, whatever we want to call it these days. We got a shout out for multiple people using our report in talks at conferences that we weren't at. There's people are citing us. But this report seems to get worse or point to the fact that we're getting worse at this as an industry and not better, the problem set of leaking secrets. So could you give us a quick high level on where that report came from and maybe the findings that we're releasing to the world?
Yeah, so I think it's your point is really interesting. This report, the goal of the report was always, and also it's at the the heart of the philosophy of Kit Carlyon. We are, I think, one of the few cybersecurity company to do a non-gated report. I mean, like, you don't need to put your email and your infos to get a PDF report, and it's the same for our product philosophy. Like, you don't need to sign an NDA to try the product. We don't hide our documentation behind same behind an NDA and a paywall. It's just open, because at the end, yeah, our goal is to educate people on the problem, because even after I created Kit Carlyon in 2017. And we're in 2024, and yeah, the problem is still here, and we are not the only player in the industry trying to tackle this problem. You have Microsoft, GitHub, other player in the industry. Even if you take a bit the broader picture, the secrets manager like Vault, the secrets manager from the cloud provider, CyberArk, Achilles, all these players are also trying in a certain way to limit the secrets pool, and our goal is to educate on, yeah, it's definitely a problem. It's growing, because also the number of developers is growing. You have more and more developers, and they have more and more technology to master. You know, when you look at the developer today, he needs to do backend, frontend, DevOps. Now also security, we shift left when you think about it. So yeah. It's a tough problem, and yeah, we need to help them. We need to educate people, and that's at the end of the day, that's the goal of the report. On the interesting numbers, I think definitely the number of leaks is growing. I think we're at 12 million, more than 12 million this year. What's I think really interesting in this report, we did an analysis on the stuff that's I think really important for companies to understand, is like we were looking at basically what happened after a secret leak. So we focused on specific secrets that where we can do validity check, and just to see, like, when you think about the remediation of a secret, it's pretty simple. Once it has been exposed internally and or on a public space like GitHub, it needs to be revoked. There is no alternative. You must really assume it's compromised. So the true indication of the remediation has been done is at least you need to revoke the secrets. And so we looked at two stuff, which is I think really interesting though. So we looked at basically the what happens after, like, the secret is leaked in two ways. So the first is, like, when will be the secrets revoked, and in how many cases the secret is actually revoked. And on the other side, like, more of the bad way to do the remediation is just say, oh, I made a mistake, I'm going to try to hide it. So either with a delete commit or either, you know, erasing the repo. And we realized, like, I think after even one month, I think it's more like, yeah, 90% of the secrets are still active. Whereas like 40 or 50% of them, yeah, 50% have been deleted, which means like people have this false sense of security that they just erase the secret from GitHub, but they don't revoke it, and they think it's safe. And we called it, like, it's a little bit of marketing term, but it's also our job, zombie leaks, which I think it's pretty straightforward. It's just like, when you think about it, it's hard from a defender standpoint, because you will just do a traditional way and monitor your asset on public GitHub and say, oh, I haven't linked any secrets, it's not on GitHub, but it has been in the past. So It could have been, attackers also crawl GitHub in real time, so they could, take your secrets, wait actually that you delete it from GitHub and wait for 6 months, 12 months, 18 months to use it to do lateral movement. And it creates this huge weakness in your organization that you think you are secured, but you are not. And this, I think it's one of the most terrible feeling in cybersecurity, is this false sense of security. You think you are covered, but you actually are in big trouble in the future.
Yeah. I mean, it's a big problem because the knee-jerk reaction from people is to cover, is to delete, right? Cover your tracks. And I think where this is especially bad is when you have an employee, a developer, that accidentally leaks something publicly and their first reaction is to delete it. They've done the damage, but they're trying to cover up. And they may not, none of that may be malicious, right? And almost it never is, but they're making it harder on everyone by doing that, because the only course of action is to revoke the secret. It's the only thing that you can really do. Yeah,
but at the same time, it's hard because it's not usually as a developer, when you leak a secret, you don't even have the permission and, you don't even have access to, the product or to revoke the secret, which is like you need to say in your organization, I made a mistake and we need to fix it. And it's where it's a team sport when you think about it. And you need to have like a good company culture to do that actually when you deeply think about it. Because if you have like a bad company culture where people don't want to say like they are wrong, like they will of course try to hide the mistake they did.
Yeah, I actually ran into that this past very recently talking to someone, a consultant. It's like, I have heard of you guys only because I'm a client, keeps getting notifications from you, and every time I follow the links they send me, it goes to a 404 on GitHub. It's like the repo not found. And I'm like, well, that's weird, but that's probably they're deleting it. And he's like, yeah, and that would make sense why they're getting so many. I think they're just republishing the same repo over and over again and taking down every time you email them. Like, that's not the intention there. They should be fixing and revoking that secret in the repo. I was like, I'm going to bring
Yeah. Well, I mean, one of the interesting things is we've been doing this report for 4 years now. The first report we had, we found 3 million secrets. Then we found 6 million, then 10 million, now 12 million. The problem's growing. Now, part of the problem is GitHub is growing, so the amount of code. Part of it is also that developers have more tools to deal with now, so there's more secrets and all of that. Part of it's that there's more secrets to be found. But there are some initiatives that are being in place. And I think a lot of people have this idea that maybe this year this is finally going to be a solved problem, because we saw some announcements. One of them was from GitHub saying that they're doing push protection for secrets, which meaning they're detecting secrets themselves and preventing people from being able to commit them. Is this going to solve the problem that we will have? Will we get a report to say zero secret leaks next year?
That's a great question. So we did the analysis ourselves. So two stuff here, like on the push protection. The first stuff that's really interesting to note and really important to understand is GitHub is it's a version control. GitHub is a version control system. So a VCS, and their goal is build product for developers. So there will always in the trade-off, and there is always this trade-off in security between the velocity of the developer and the security of a company. You can you can change a little bit you can choose which side you are on, but basically the more harder, if your security policies are harder, it will decrease the velocity of the developer than on the other side. If you choose a lighter policy, the goal will be to maximize the developer velocity. And GitHub is really in this position. They're personalized. The developer, their goal is to maximize developer velocity. And when you look at the features they release, it's exactly what they try to optimize. It's saying, we are only going to activate the push protection, where we, for the detectors, where we are sure we have no false positives. So it's prefix keys with validity checkers. So think about some AWS key, Slack secrets. But when we do on our side, the analysis, it represents approximately 25% of the secrets we find on GitHub. We found on GitHub, especially. It would be really hard for GitHub to detect all the generic secrets where you have like, actually it's a probabilistic detection, so you can make mistake. And that, yeah, that's something you don't want to implement at the push protection stage, because you don't want your developers not being able to push code anymore, because that's what their job and what they are trying to do. And yeah, that's I think. And on the other side, for our company, it's, you know, if only one secret is compromised, it can be a huge danger for the company and the whole organization. So I think it's really good for the community, because it will it's especially good for education. I think the huge advantage I see in the push protection feature, it's not only in the way that, yeah, of course it will avoid more secrets you know, being pushed on GitHub, but actually GitHub has been doing secret detection on the post received side for years, so they are, and AWS has done it. So I think for a lot of this type of secrets, they were already defending pretty well. But yeah, on the education side, I think it's good for the whole community, saying okay, we need to care about secrets, and yeah, at the end of the day, that's really good. But on the other side, yeah, I think GitHub is not a security company, so they don't have the same I would say commitment than other company and companies like GitGuardian to really secure all this organization and all our customers.
And it's one of those things that makes a lot of sense if you are a GitHub customer and you're pushing everything into public GitHub. Yes, this is I think going to be a godsend for a lot of open source projects out there, but it doesn't work on private repos when you're pushing to it. And we're talking about one platform out of dozens you could possibly push to, including your own Git servers, which brings us to the other side of the equation of what we do here at GitGuardian, and that is the private monitoring, the our secrets detection platform. If you go to our website, that's what we're calling the product, but that looking at your internal code, looking for secrets there. And I think because the word Git is in our name, a lot of people just assume we're going to look for your source code internally, help you find it there, find secrets there. But we've recently expanded. Now we're looking at places like Jira and Slack, helping people find where they're putting those plain text credentials out where they could be found by an adversary or internally or by anybody that gains access to those environments. Can you talk a little about that transformation, like why we're starting to look at places outside of source code, and maybe give us a little insight into the roadmap ahead of like where else are we going to plan on looking?
Yeah, it's a great question. We call them internally, like, you know, expanding is what we call other data sources, is saying like the secret sprawl is not limited to the code, even if from our experience and what we see with our customers and on the data we analyze, most of the secrets are leaked on code, but definitely there is still a good portion of it also leaking on other sources. Can be messaging system like Slack or Teams, can be ticketing systems like Jira, can be documentation and wiki system like Confluence, and yeah, there's definitely stuff we will actually scan for secrets, because it's a risk for the organization. And well, as I said before, the attacker need only one secret to do damage in the company. And on the roadmap, I think, yeah, definitely we can expand. And also what's really interesting, we also have these capabilities internally to be able to scan packages and Docker image, but we can build native integration with Docker registries, package registries. So when you think about it, it's every tool that's directly linked to the software supply chain, because you need to be protected at every, I will say, every stage of this, you know, factory of code, and we need to be able to scan any code artifact. And yeah, it's definitely a need for companies and yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the secrets get into everywhere. I love the term secret sprawl because it really illustrates very well that they really find their way into every nook and cranny of your supply chain. Everything that's connected to anything that can have secrets in there. But you know, when I first joined, we were a very niche, best of breed detection service, and we only detected secrets in public that we've talked about. We then started detecting secrets internally, and now we detect secrets in lots of other places. But we're also much more than just secrets now. We introduced our Honey Tokens module, which are like fake credentials, and we've just started entering into, I'm going to say the code security platform. We're going into the world of the big boys. We've released, you know, SCA and with software composition analysis, IAC, infrastructure as code scanning. Where is GitGuardian going as a platform in whole, considering our history with secrets detection and where we want to kind of end up and what we're offering?
Yeah, so I think it's a great question that a lot of security company and security company ask themselves. It's like, yeah, a lot the industry is speaking about consolidation. What should we do? What's our product vision? On our side, I think like the in terms of product philosophy, we have always been deaf over breath, meaning like we really try to solve a problem before going to the other, and really try to bring value to the to our customers. So we became the leader on secrets, and it's only the market says secret detection, but I prefer the term of secret security because it for us it includes like prevention, detection, remediation, and we especially focus on the remediation. Meaning like our goal is not to find secrets; it's making sure like which should be at the end of the day the goal of every security company is like making sure our customers don't get breached. And for us on you know the secret side is making sure you don't have any more secrets. Active secrets in your code base, so don't have any risk. So our end goal is to do the remediation. So making sure that, of course, we need to have to be able to detect all the secrets, not have false positive, and we're always trying to improve the secret detection engine. But I think we reach a maturity plateau here, and we will always improve, and there's always innovation here, and we'll be always innovating there and be better than the other. But I think where we really shine is a remediation. So and how we did that is really with what we call the shared responsibility model is making the it's not only shifting everything left, so saying to the developer, okay, you need this is now your responsibility, you need to put the secrets out of the code. It's just trying to build the best tools and give tools in the developer workflows, but also give tools to the security team so they can actually together like handle the remediation of secrets in real time in the historical data, which is a tough problem to be fair, which is a really hard problem. And it's exactly what we will leverage for expanding in code security. So really fixing on this philosophy and this vision of remediation with, I think it's really hard, and it's what it's a big challenge. So as a, you know, as a product person and an engineer, it's always really interesting, and you need patience to do that and you know, to deep dive into that. And it's really, I think, compared to a lot of other players that will just have more breadth over their focus, meaning they say, okay, you have a lot of different code security vertical, and we'll detect as much issues as possible and put them in a single platform. Our vision and mission is more on saying, okay, we try to do less stuff, but really well, and try to remediate, and really at the end of the day fix stuff. Yep. And yeah, I think the big players in this, even like GitHub, I think is starting on this philosophy, and they have this buzzword, which is pretty nice. The sentence is like, you know, speaking about code security vulnerabilities, they just said like found means fixed. which is, when you think about it, it's pretty powerful. It's like you don't need to only find vulnerabilities that nobody cares actually. I have customers, I know I have problems, but I want your help to fix them.
This all kind of sounds and points to the fact that we're helping people understand the problem set as well as the remediation side. And I just would love to get your gut reaction to a term that I often hear thrown around out there, that this is just another move toward trying to get to a single pane of glass. Just as a thought leader in the space, like when you hear someone say, aren't you just trying to be another single pane of glass player out there? Like, what's your reaction to that?
I think it depends. I think if it's just a single pane of glass, that just, you know, the new term is called like also ASPM, so Application Security Posture Management, or where you can have a closed or open vision, meaning you're able to collect and gather vulnerabilities or, you know, input from other scanning tools. If the goal is only to give to show your security posture and only show the issues, for me, it's really limited. And actually, it's when you think deeply about it from an engineer standpoint, it's just data analyzing on the finding of your security tool. So you could actually send all your security findings to a data warehouse like Snowflake and just do analytics on it. And that's basically what some, you know, of this product are doing. So I don't think it brings a lot of value, but if you use this data and you have built, you know, you have a developer community and you are able to understand really the developer persona, the security persona, you have built the remediation workflow, you are present in every part of the SDLC, and your goal is really to say, okay, I'm just not going to show you all your problems, but I'm going to show you how to fix them and help you in this journey. Yeah, definitely, I think it brings value to the table. And so to summarize a little bit, I think there is this two approach. For me, there are two approaches. Is like, are you building this single pane of glass to actually show your just to see your problems, or are you building it to fix your problem? And I think it's the two ways. And for us, like the way we are, where we want to go is really on fixing stuff and on the remediation side.
I mean that makes a lot of sense, and I think this is something that I think people often missed. Is I like to use the example of how difficult things are to remediate, because you know, if you're an organization, and when we roll out Git Guardian, we will probably find thousands of secrets in your systems, and if you're a traditional company, you may have one or two AppSec engineers, and they need to investigate every incident, rotate it, redeploy it, talk to the developers, make sure you reissue it without causing any downtime. And you need to do that thousands of times. It's really impossible. And so I like what you're saying. You know, secrets detection is not doing it justice, because it's only kind of 10% of the issue is detecting the secrets. What do you do with that information? That's, you know, that's the real challenge.
And I think it's hard, and it's hard for also other vulnerabilities. You know, when you think about ACI is the same stuff. Like you have, and it's even harder, I think, for other type of code security vulnerabilities. But because when you think about it, like for us, for a secret is when you're leaking, you're putting a secret in code. It's not subjective. It's like there is no, there is not a valid reason why you should do that.
People will try, Eric. People have tried with me in the past. They will try to validate it. Trust me.
And definitely. No, there is some use case where actually even for us, like we have a lot of fake credential in our code base to you know, test our own workflows and algorithms. So definitely we need to tackle this use case. But I wish the traditional company have, there are really few use cases where it makes sense, but for a lot of other code vulnerabilities, if you think about SAST or if you think about vulnerability in dependency, you have this subjective. Maybe 95% of the issues are actually not even relevant, which means like you don't even need to take care of them, because either the code is not deployed for SE or SAST, or the vulnerable package is not used. So there are multiple reasons, and yeah, that's why people talk a lot about prioritization, just because it would be a mistake to consider like each of these code security vulnerabilities from SAST and SE as actually a vulnerability. You should actually just close them and ignore them, which is not possible for secrets. Like, for secrets, it's really like, okay, I have a lot of secrets. Where I should start first? And you should start with the most sensitive one. But on your whole long security journey, you need to actually remove them all, because even a small one with can trigger after it can always create a lateral movement, and that can get other secrets or other permission escalate, and at the end of the day create and it's a good hygiene for your team to just have this habit of not putting secrets in code.
So it's 2024 and we can't have a podcast without bringing up AI. I think it would harm our number of listeners if we got through a whole episode and never brought up AI. They'd tune us out, say, yeah, they're not relevant anymore. So let's bring up AI. We have seen some talk in the market out there of AI assists to help with your scanning. Just flat out, is there a role for AI in detecting secrets, and what's GitGuardian's position on that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I always tell the story because I think it's a pretty nice one. It's like when GPT was released, like I think we, as every strongly company with a strong product and engineering culture, we ask ourselves like, okay, and I think a lot of companies should probably add the same question about like, will GPT replace my business, and will GPT replace my algorithm? Will GPT replace my product? And so we did.
In my case, will GPT replace my job? That was my first. <Yeah. laughs> That's so, when videos started coming out.
as a developer, you say, "Will GPT replace me?" As a, everybody I think asked asked themselves the same question, and. And so we did a benchmark between, okay, like if I create a prompt with GPT-4 Turbo against own GitGuardian secret detection algorithm, what's going to be the performance? And we evaluate on three criteria, which is speed, cost, and, pure like secret detection performance, meaning recall. So is my algorithm, will my algorithm miss real secret, and precision, will my algorithm throw a lot of false positive and make my dashboard completely unusable? So the first, so on the cost side, the first step is, yeah, GPT-4 is super expensive. So we did the benchmark. We scan all, the public GitHub code in real time. So if we were to just feed all that code to GPT-4, it would cost us like, it was $200K per day, so it's a huge amount of money. And the second was with speed, like this, all these it's super large models. It's inference, so the prediction of this algorithm is GPU based, so it takes time, and especially it's limited. The number of tokens the algorithm can take as input is limited, and so it's costly, and the inference time is high, so it's slow. To summarize, and the third point was, yeah, hopefully it was also less performant in terms of pure detection than our algorithm, even with a fine-tuned prompt. But so that's, I would say, the pure the raw benchmark. But it has also a lot of advantage, but on other. Subject for us is like we chose to have what we call hybrid model for detection. So a first part that's actually take all the advantage of our current model, so it's fast, efficient, and it's deterministic, which is meaning like if you run the algorithm like 10 times, you will have the the same result, which is not the case for a probabilistic algorithm like GPT, and actually use the power of LLM to more for the prioritization and the remediation use case, where they really shine because they can understand the context of the code and they can tell you like if a secret is in a production context, more in a test context, you know, understand what's the code behind it and just, you know, give a lot of actually insights to the user to do the prioritization. And the same for the remediation. It's really shining for code fixing, meaning like I've found how to help the developers to what's the alternative to, you know, put your secrets in code. How would you change this code to make a call to a secrets manager, user environment variable, any type of, you know, any ways to do it the proper way. So at the end of the day for us, it's, you know, the detection should stay deterministic and use the power LLM for prioritization or remediation. And I think that's the approach we take, and for now it's working really well.
I think it's too easy for a lot of people to take a binary approach to AI. Say AI is good or AI is bad. But the reality consists is, well, AI is here and it can be both, depending on how you implement it. And I like the approach, the hybrid approach that we're adopting. Is, you know, it can add context and solve it, but it's not going to replace it yet.
Exactly. And the other point is also like, even in this approach, hybrid, or if you do full detection model based on AI, you have also after a choice to make between, okay, am I ready to send all my code to OpenAI, or do I want it, you know, have my own LLM models and you know, guarantee more security and privacy on the data. And that's a need of a lot of customers in regulated institutions and regulated industries like financial industry, healthcare industry, you know, government industry, that are not allowed to actually send their data to any third party. So you will need to be able to build models that can be run into their own cloud. And that's, yeah, actually from an engineering perspective, and yeah, it's a really tough challenge, and it's doable. It is definitely doable.
Well, we're coming to the end of the show now, but we like to ask, I guess, a couple of the same questions each time. And first question I have is, what is the best security advice that you would give to anyone listening? And the second question was going to be, what's the worst advice you've ever heard someone give? But we'll start with the best. What's the best advice that you would give to people listening?
That's a good point. I will say, for me, it's usually, I like to say that more for choosing a vendor is a most simple, transparent solution are usually the most effective.
And I like that. There's a lot of very black box solutions out there where you really try hard to figure out what on earth they do, and they're surrounded by secrecy. And what's the worst advice that you've ever heard, or maybe you've ever been given? What's the worst security advice that when you hear it, you shudder?
Actually, it's not really an advice, but it's the stuff I'm seeing every day. It's related, like, you know, when you sign up to a new account, you say enter a new password, and you know, you have these rules about like it should be a strong password, and you need 8 letters, and you know, one uppercase, one number. But when you think about it, like if you know, and you know, I ask a lot of my friends that are not working in cybersecurity, and I would say what 20%, 30% use a password manager. And you know, as a cybersecurity practitioner, I'm like, it's impossible. Like everybody should have a password manager. And I'm like, why just as an advice, all you know, the 10 most popular website when you create an account, it's not saying like you should create a 10, you know, 10 a password with 10 characters, but just say like use a secret manager. I think sometimes, and it's related to my first like advice, is the most simple stuff like could, you know, generate the biggest impact and the most outcome. I think, yeah, it's just you know, an advice like that on the test 10 most popular website would probably increase the number of people using Secret Manager and reduce the number of breach, and you know, improve the whole security gen of people in general. And
absolutely.
And
Yeah. Well, Eric, it's been fantastic to have you on the show, and it's been good. I love chatting to you when you're here. Dwayne, do you have any final words before we tune out and click the big red button?
No, just want to say thanks very much for everything. Thanks for making Git Guardian a platform. You're helping a lot of people in the world. Well, the platform is, and wouldn't be possible without your hard work. So thanks very much.
Yeah, with all the hard work of the Guardian in general, it just started the sparkle. That's what we said. Yeah. Just the first line of code, and after, like, journey continued.
Yeah, well, it's been a wild ride, and I'm looking forward to holding on for a bit longer still to come.